Blog Talk Radio.
Of Shadows. This is your host, Robert M., accompanied by the always awesome and lovely Mrs. Pam, I believe. You there, Pam?
Yes, you are. Hello there, Robert. How's it going?
Oh, it's all right. I just got done eating some cake and drinking some milk, so I guess I'm all right.
Ooh, yum. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. So, today, we are going to be delving into the recesses and crevices of the broken heart. And I know that there's almost everybody can relate to the subject. So I know that there was a great turnout as far as poetry is concerned. So I look forward to seeing a bunch of that tonight.
Me too. And you're right. You know, not everybody is anti-Valentine's Day, but pretty much everybody can relate to at one point or another of having their heart broken. And it was great to see the variety of responses that we got to the prompts. And like you said, a wonderful turnout that is definitely going to be great to, you know, to delve into.
All right. So where are we going to start first?
All right. We will start out with After Love Is in the Air by After the Fire. And Robert, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
Okay. Love is in the air. I hear that love is in the air. It better leave me be. It never lasts. It isn't fair. And it's not tricking me. I've played the game and I have lost more times than I'll admit. The loss of love's too high a cost and I will not permit. Polluted air to make me fall again. Oh, no, not me. I've seen the writing on the wall, and Cupid, I'm not free. The pain's not worth the pleasure, and the gain's not worth the loss. I bear the scars and understand how love can double-cross. I'd truly rather be alone than have a broken heart. I'd rather have a kidney stone than feel old Cupid's dart. If love is truly in the air, it's outdoors, I presume. So I'll just stay here in my chair, safe in my living room. And poem. I thought that that was quite succinct, and it had like a kind of like a Scrooge vibe to it, but like a Valentine's Day version of Ebenezer Scrooge, which is awesome. And that's exactly what I was hoping for. And it was very easy to read. Like the rhythm was, the cadence was easy to capture, and it flowed so well, and very simple yet very succinct and to the point, like directly on prompt. And I'm glad that they got inspired to write for the show. I don't know where my favorite part is, because it all flowed together so well. But I like the convergence in the second and third stanzas. As I played the game and have lost more times than I'll admit, the loss of love's too high a cost, and I will not permit polluted air to make me fall again. Oh, no, not me. I've seen the writing on the wall, and Cupid, I'm not free. So I think I really like that little intersection there. I thought it was very clever that they ended the second stanza and left it open to the third stanza. So I was pretty good there. What about you, Pam? What were your thoughts?
I did enjoy this one. This is one of those contests where I put in that people could either write something dark and serious, you know, or they could write dark humor. And I really like that Dave, with his wonderful rhyme and flow and his word choices, you know, went with the dark humor. And you're right, you know, one part flows really great into the next, so it's difficult to choose a great, you know, a favorite part. But I think for me, I really like, I truly rather be alone than have a broken heart. I'd rather have a kidney stone than feel old Cupid's dart. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, I hear them kidney stones are no joke. So that's a pretty bold statement there.
Yeah, right.
Do we have anyone else on the line yet, Miss Pam? Or
there is. Good. We have Weaver of Dreams, aka Kate, with us. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Kate. Glad you could join us.
Thank you so much. Hello, Robert. I'm so pleased to be here. Hola.
Yeah, I'm glad you decided to grace us with your presence. So yeah, you can do some reading for us too. That's cool. So it's not just old me and Pam playing poetic ping pong over here.
Poetic ping pong.
I love that. Poetic ping pong. That is so cool.
So yeah. All right. Let's get on, and I really like that piece. That was awesome. All right, where are we going next then?
All right, up next we have Don't You Dare, Cupid by Darkened Auras, and it goes like this. hey, check her out. She's pretty hot. Don't even try it, Cupid. Remember what the last time got? Because of you, I've loved and lost. You played matchmaker and I paid the cost. But don't you want to be in love? I can surely set the bait. I'm warning you now, you fluffy cherub. You are really tempting fate. Oh, fine, be that way. You're on your own. Good, go away. Can't screw it up if I'm all alone. End poem.
I mean, technically you can, but another person just complicates it. So, you know, at least you have yourself to blame. Again, this is another one of those pieces that's very relatable. You know, like when I was younger, I used to write poems to Cupid like that. Like, you know, yo, leave me the hell alone, dude. Take your poisonous darts somewhere else. This really reminds me of those times and kind of that, like I said, the simplicity of it makes it very relatable. And this falls in line with the previous poem in the sense that they're over there telling them, hey, you know, you need to back the hell up, Cupid. I don't need your help or would be help, lack thereof. So yeah, I thought this is also very funny, to the point, right on prompt, and I liked it. What about you, Kate? What'd you think?
It was hilarious. It was so good, and it just bounced along, which I love. But those last two lines. Too good. Well, it wasn't the last two lines. Okay, the penultimate stanza, the last two lines. I'm warning you now, you fluffy cherub. You are really tempting fate. Oh, just so good. I really enjoyed it, and I'm smiling all the time. So, yes, it was a beautiful share. Thank you so much, Dark and Doris.
Indeed. What about you, Pam? What were your thoughts?
Are you on mute, my dear?
I am, yes. Thank you for asking. I did like this one. It's another one with great dark humor. And I really like how it treats, you see Cupid as the wannabe wingman. And it even has that casual kind of conversation. Like, you know, Cupid, you know, being in Roman mythology, a god, but instead here he's just that buddy. Hey, check her out, she's pretty hot. Don't even try it, Cupid. Remember what the last time got. I like how she created in this the back and forth, the conversational tone between this character and Cupid, and you know, the bite at the end was especially great, you know. And like you said, you can screw it up if you're on your own, but it's so much better to have someone else to blame. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I think wingman is a perfect phrase. or would be wingman. Yeah, so far so good. Like you said, Pound, this is going pretty well. So where are we off to next?
All right. Up next we have Crimson Blood by Ed Hunter. And Kate, will you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Certainly will. My pleasure. Crimson Blood. Ooh. Okay. Even for a short time, stepping out of life, nourish me to understand how imperfect this world is. Life is like a spider web. When a gust of wind blows the web apart, the next day the spider rebuilds and continues to live with what has been provided. I must think back in time how society crushed me like an ant and left me to burn on the searing concrete into dust. But how can a memory crawl languidly between stepping stones from a broken heart without falling? It doesn't. It's there, and it will continue to crawl deep into Passion's flower of crimson blood. End poem.
Wow, complete change of pace here. That's pretty brutal. I really like the use of the spider web and like move the metaphor with the spider and the spider web and the lesson that, you know, that he said, like in the beginning, for a short time, stepping out of life nourished me to understand how imperfect the world is. So you like basically stepping out of your comfort zone and maybe trying something new and you just get hit with like a reality check, so to speak. And then after that, it goes into, you know, a cyclical disaster tour, trial and error. But later on, it becomes deeper than that when he says, how can a memory crawl languidly between stepping stones from a broken heart without falling? Like it doesn't, you know, it's there and it will continue to crawl deep into passion's flower of crimson blood. So, you know, the heart just is maimed and destroyed and tossed on the ground, and that's basically all that's left. I really appreciated the artistry that went into this, and as well as being relatable. And it was no convolution. It was great. Like everything was great. I enjoyed it. Thank you, Ed, for that. What were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is definitely a powerful and emotive dark rite. I like how it speaks on not only the individual broken heart, but how people in general, society, can break our hearts. I must think back in time how society crushed me like an ant and left me to burn on the searing concrete into dust. That really speaks on the idea of acts of betrayal. And I also like the end lines too, because it reminds us that, you know, that you can forgive, but you can't forget. Those memories of being hurt are always going to come back. Sometimes they come back less and less, or they affect us a little less, but they still are always there, ready to just jump out. So powerful, right, and very well done.
Indeed. Having read it, Kate, what did you think about it?
It was very nice. Very nice to read. You know, you can only get hurt so many times and bounce back. And that's evident. And each time you're hurt, a little piece of you is broken and left to burn. So, I mean, you can imagine how terrible this chap must be feeling, that this has been happening to him so often, that it's really nothing left, is there? I think that's awful. Is that wonderful writing? I mean, it really grips me anyway. I thought it was great, but so, so sad. But, you know, I'm afraid life is so much like that these days. Shallow and grasping only the moment. Not a lot of thought put into anything, apart from the things that interest you, like making money, perhaps. But yes, this was very, very deep. I loved the title, Crimson Blood. So thank you, Ed, for sharing. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, especially in life nowadays, there's a lot of numbness and there's a lack of communication, though we have so many tools to communicate. And it's just there's so much trauma in the world and there's not much love left, which is sad, but also understandable for the time. All right, where are we headed next, Miss Pam?
Up next, we have A Curse of Unrequited Love by Daniel Duhaime. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. A Curse of Unrequited Love. Seas of sorrow, followed by salty tears of an appeasement, a badge of a broken soul that sometimes can never be mended by the glue of compassion as it lingers in a dark cloud of despair. Sadness envelops the mind in an array of lost illusions from the veil of hope, who cries for the afflicted, who suffer in the heart of silence, fighting a war that goes unseen. Pray for us, great Aphrodite. Let the golden harpsichord play for us a tune that opens our hearts from love's gloom. Remove the curse that love has dealt and show us mercy from its spell so that we can thrive in Love's Kiss. And boom. Wow. I thought that was interesting. He even called on old Aphrodite's help. That's pretty intense right there. I like the flow from stanza to stanza, like it one into the other. Like the first four stanzas, I think they're all interwoven and connected. That's kind of like a run-on, which kind of sets for a good change of pace, because a lot of poems are start-stop. But this type is like it's continuous until it isn't. And I like the part that says, sometimes can never be mended by the glue of compassion as it lingers in a dark cloud of despair. Sadness envelops the mind in an array of lost illusions from the veil of hope. You know, like hope is one of those things that is the almost the epitome of a double-sided sword. You know, like it has great power, and whether it just like love. And whether that power or intonates of a positive or negative response is it all hinges on the moment, you know. So that I appreciate that, and the array of lost delusions is a interesting way of putting that, you know, like that kind of like fooling yourself into like wanting something to be real, but in the end you know that it's not, and still you try, you know. That's where the hope comes in. But I thought this was a great piece. Daniel Duhaime did excellent, and very on point to the prompt, and yeah, it was a great read. Kate, what did you think?
It certainly was a great read, beautifully put together, for giving you exactly was meant by this A Curse of Unrequited Love. Beautiful title, A Curse of Unrequited Love. And it must be the most awful thing to have to deal with. You know, better to be ignored altogether. You know, I never even thought about than know that the person knows you care about them but doesn't really care back. It's horrible. But there's great Aphrodite. I thought that was a wonderful thing to bring in at that point, like the golden harpsichord play for us, a tune that opens our hearts from love's gloom. Yeah, they just want to forget about love for a while, and I'm not surprised. It's very well written, and I could feel the sadness. Such a shame. So thank you, Daniel. That was very well done.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, one Aphrodite, because Aphrodite, I forget which is it, Pam will know if it's Greek or Roman, but I believe it's Greek. Aphrodite is the Greek one, but it's the says it's the goddess of love. It's kind of almost like he beckons her to kind of cleanse the memory of that love and just give him some real love. You know, like that's what it seems kind of like. I don't know. What about you, Pam? What do you think?
Yeah, I really like this one. And yes, Aphrodite is the Greek goddess of love. Ironically, she's also the goddess of war, too. So she's pulling double duty.
Love and war, huh?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I like that he wrote on unrequited love. To me, this is very relatable. I don't know about other people, but I feel like the majority of my heartbreaks have happened because of unrequited love, although they're slightly less painful than when somebody actually does love you, or you know, and then it ends. I really liked this all the way through. I did like that part about the sadness envelopes the mind in an array of lost illusions from the veil of hope. I like what you had to say about that, Robert, because we do try to convince ourselves that something exists when it doesn't. I also really like where it says, remove the curse that love has dealt and show us mercy from its spell so that we can thrive in love's kiss. There's almost a positive note to that ending and the idea of wanting the pain to be taken away, wanting that opportunity to love again. So nicely written and very well done.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, even though they were hurt and, you know, devastated in many ways, they still hold out. They're still holding out for that. So I think that takes quite a bit of strength to do that, or determination. Yeah. All right. So thank you for that, Daniel. Where are we headed next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Pink Champagne by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Gazing at sunset, watching soft, bright colors drift, sweet, colorful clouds, alone, daydreaming, laying curled up in my bed, sipping pink champagne, dining on truffles, assorted seeds, candy, sweets, deliciously eats, toffee, caramel, swirled starlight twinkling, white chocolate shimmer, glistening moonlight, I'll spoil myself tonight, velvet rose petals, cherry bubble baths, covered in vanilla cream, luxuriously, soothed in red satin, caressed by sweet melodies, dancing round my room, writing poetry, watching pretty anime, making arts and crafts, baking pink cupcakes, swirled round whipped cream and sprinkles, dazzling rainbows, cozied up in bed, dreams of love dance in my head, wishing you were here. End poem.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, it's an interesting take that there. It says in the author's note, I'll be my own date and give myself luxurious relaxation and romance through anime while sipping on champagne, eating my favorite chocolates, surrounded by roses. Self-love and daydreaming of being loved by my muse. Yeah, that's really cool because self-love is important. And I know that I'm not an ambassador of such, but I can understand how it is important and how some people can draw their strength from being able to love yourself, because, you know, a lot of times people say, if you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else? Well, it's simple. It's because you give people something that you never really had, because you know what you're lacking and you don't want them to lack it. So I can understand, like, her where she draws it from. This is great. It's a very fun piece, and being able to just sit there and enjoy your own company and have fun and you know, eat chocolates and things like that and wonder about this other person. It's almost like high schoolish in a way, like when you have a crush on somebody and you really, really hope that they call, or you really think about them a lot, and you know what I mean? It reminds me of that time, and it's because it's a really playful poem, but it's also like a very humanistic poem, you know, like because almost anyone can relate to that. So I think she did a great job with her colors, as usual. She's always very colorful in her poetry, and she's very descriptive, and there's a lot of sweets here, which, yum. But anyways, I thought it was great, and I'm glad that Betty decided to enter this and gave us a different perspective. So, Pam, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I really enjoy this one. Wonderful imagery throughout. There is that little touch of sadness with the very end line, wishing you were here, you know, because no matter how much you treat yourself, there's always, you know, that love that you're missing. But I do think, I like that this does speak on the idea of self-love and self-care. I tell you, as soon as those chocolates go 50 to 75% off a day to two after Valentine's Day, this will be me laying in bed, eating my chocolates, all kinds of sugary sweet love. And so, yeah, just a very enjoyable write, and that does speak on, well, on just learning to spoil yourself and not expecting someone else to do it. So very well done.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get the euphoria from actual love, the sugary euphoria is the next best thing.
Exactly.
What about you, Kate? What did you think about it?
Oh, I thought it was, I always loved Betty's work, but this was just so good. This was so, as you say, it was colorful and telling us it's not, you don't need to have someone else with you to enjoy yourself, because there are the toffees and the chocolates and the pink champagne. Very nice. I thought it was wonderful. Yes, you're right. I did note that little bit of sadness at the end. Understandable, really. There was something I was going to say about what I just read, and I've completely forgotten it. Is that not the most annoying thing in the world?
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably something incredibly profound, but unfortunately, we will never know because it's gone in my old brain. Sorry about that. But Betty, thank you so much for this. It was very, very enjoyable and made me smile.
Indeed. Those thoughts that are lost are almost always the most profound. Like I told somebody, I said, I think the best poem I ever made was one that I said to the rain, and I don't have it. So, yeah, I get that.
Awful. Yeah, no, horrible.
All right, Pam, where are we going to next?
All right. Up next, we have Valentine's Day by Casey Day, and she was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So let me find that, and here we go.
Valentine's Day. Red lipstick smeared like war paint across my young porcelain skin. I woke to an empty bed and a pounding in my head, the only reminder that you even truly existed. I didn't know your name. Guess I forgot to ask in the song and dance of liquid promise and unbridled promiscuity. There was a war waging, indeed, inside of me. Spilling blood across my bedsheets, my body, my soul, sacrificed. For a counterfeit sense of control and a burning desire for revenge that both excited and terrified me. I longed for your desperation and yearned for your self-defeating pain. I was willing to give anything for it. So I stared at the defiled girl in the pristine mirror, smeared black liquid across my eyes, and said, "Come and get me."
Very nice SoundCloud indeed, as always, Casey. This was great. And I love the use of color here, the red lipstick smeared like war paint across my young porcelain skin. You know, you got the red and then the porcelain. Later on, it ends with smeared black liquid across my eyes. So I love all the contrasts and the use of colors. But also, I like the, it seems as though almost like there's a bit of shame at first, and then the shame turns into something else. I like the counterfeit sense of control and a burning desire for revenge that both excited and terrified me. That it displays a bit of a vulnerability there, because the people we're often two people. Like there's the part of us that wants to do good, and there's the part of us that is not so much. And the excited part is kind of like what's that word? Sadistic in a way. And then the terrified part is kind of realizing the depth in which you've gone. And then it goes deeper into, I long for your desperation and yearn for your self-defeating pain. I was willing to give anything for it. I was like, whoa, That's a to me, that's it's delving deeper into the sadism, and then at the end though, so I started stared at the defiled girl in the pristine mirror, smeared black liquid across my face, and said, "Come and get me." I like the attitude, but it seems like, I don't know, I can't tell like if it's a false, like a strength, or if it's, because he said defiled girl in the pristine mirror. So I'm thinking maybe it's like an act of sorts. So I really enjoy this piece because, one, it makes me think. Two, it's very, there's an eloquence and strength in it, and there's also like kind of like sense of like I said, shame, not shame, what's the word, there's another word, but it's very debaucherous, and I really like that. I'm gonna have to give it a couple more reads through, I think, for me anyways. Kate, what about you, what did you think about it?
It was a very interesting, very interesting poem. Reading it again, it kind of seems to me that this is a need, a desperate need for someone, whatever that someone is or whoever that someone is, to basically worship her so that she can then say, "Ah, not really bothered." It's that kind of control and then ultimate betrayal that does sometimes happen when you've been badly hurt. And so you want to hand that on, you want to get rid of that, you want to basically pass it on to somebody else, but you want to be the one that does it. And then you can think, well, okay, on now. So yes, I can, you know, I can totally understand this, because it does lead you along a path that can hurt so badly. You're hurting yourself as you're doing what you're trying to do to hurt someone else, and it doesn't work, unfortunately. You end up still feeling bad, but probably worse. So yes, I thought it was very well written because I related to it totally. Beautiful piece of work. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Casey.
Yeah, that perpetuity is a bitch. What about you, Pam? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Casey was inspired. This is a beautiful and emotive dark write. It has powerful imagery and metaphors. I did like the beginning with red lipstick smeared like war paint across my young porcelain skin. And I like how this speaks on the idea of wanting someone to love you for the wrong reasons, you know, wanting to be able to get that revenge either because they broke your heart or because someone else broke your heart. It kind of makes me think of what is the relationship that you have, like right after a major relationship ends and that one never
rebound.
Lasts. What's that? Yes, rebound. It makes me, yes. And it makes me think of that whole idea, the idea of, you know, luring someone into a rebound relationship in order to have that revenge on your ex. I really like that there's a dark sensual undertone to this. I longed for your desperation, yearned for your self-defeating pain. I was willing to give anything for it. And I think I was willing to give anything for it. It really speaks on the idea of sacrificing your own humanity in order to get that satisfaction that is only temporary. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both for your comments. You added some spice to my potatoes. Thank you. So, yeah, that was a great write, Casey. I enjoyed your read of it, and I enjoyed the piece itself. Where are we going next, Miss Pam?
All right, let's see here. Oh, geez. Sorry. All right, and then posting the poem. All right, up next we have Eclipse by Forgotten Dream. And Weaver, would you please give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course, happy to. Eclipse. The soft curve of his smile fills me with honeyed sunshine, golden rays reaching to every finger, flowers bloomed with soothing laughs. But the clouds in his eyes cast dark shadows, warmth leached from candy lips, like bear glass crusting over soft petals. Once musical voice sounded like shattered glass. He plunges icy hands between ribs, clutching, ripping, seizing my fluttering fish heart, and walks solitarily into shaded eastern woods. Curled like a cracked hieroglyphic in the place we last kissed, I stare as ink-stained sunsets drip across barren walls. Exposed wounds sting in frigid indigo air, nighttime flooding into the hollow spaces, swallowing stars to fill cavities, sharp points, burning edges, catch on ragged flesh, so stuffed with melancholia as it spills from wet lashes, and still emptiness eats until I'm only whispered. End poem.
Wow. That ending, man. Oof. But yeah, this was like a great progression poem. Like you start off one way and then it ends completely the opposite. Like the soft curve of the smile filled me with honeyed sunshine, golden rays reaching to every finger, flowers bloom with fusing laughs. And then, you know, it goes into, he plunges icy hands between ribs, clutching, ripping, seizing my floundering fish heart, and walks solitary into shaded eastern woods. I really, the imagery here is just profound. I really enjoyed it. Warmth leached from candied lips, like verglas crusting over soft petals. Once musical voice sounds like shattered glass. So like they went from being like an angel to like a monster. And I can really, really relate to this because sometimes when you find the true nature of someone, end up being like a completely different creature than you first encountered. And I love the fact that they did that in this poem. Like they showed that like little by little as it progressed, and then it just bam goes into swallowing stars to fill cavities, sharp points, burning edges to catch on ragged flesh. I mean, Jesus, that's just intense. I love the wording and the phrasing and indigo air. It's just all beautiful. It's beautifully tragic, but beautiful nonetheless. Thank you, Forgotten Dream, for that great poem. Kate, what did you think?
Yes, I agree with you totally. I know exactly what you mean as well, and I know exactly what Forgotten Dreams means. It's the most awful thing. People are not who you think they are when you begin a relationship with them. Everybody, I think I can say that, everybody brings the very best of themselves to the surface and becomes what you want them to be. It's just, I think it's subconscious. I don't think it's done on purpose. I think it just happens, kind of. That's probably why I've been married 3 times, because people then change. As we see here, they become what they really are. It doesn't take long either, but it happens. And if you're lucky, the person that they really are is as nice as the person they portrayed to begin with. But we find here that obviously this is not the case. So sad. I mean, it must be awful. Yes, and as you say, that last stanza is a killer. So yes, I totally, totally enjoyed that. Thank you so much for sharing Forgotten Dream.
Yeah, only a sociopath and narcissist can pull it off without feeling anything. That's intense. It's best to just be on the street or up the front and be like, this is a shit show that I am, and hope you're ready for that. And you know, but that's not always the case. But yeah, I thought this was great. What about you, Pam? What were your thoughts?
Well, I really like this. I like, Robert, that you said this is the shit show that I am, so deal with it. But, you know, I think there's different reasons. I do think there are obviously narcissists out there who purposely play that game of putting on that false front. I do also think that there are genuinely good people who just are afraid. Like, I don't know about other people, but I don't like showing my worst parts of myself to somebody I don't know, because I can't trust that they're going to be able to handle that. But yeah, it is important to be honest. But as always, I'm really impressed with Forgotten Dreams poetry. She has amazing imagery and metaphors. This is another powerful rite that felt deep within the heart. I like how it speaks on lost love, on that separation, that emptiness that's left behind. As you remember the little details of a person, like the way they used to smile at you. I did also really like that part. He plunges icy hands between ribs, clutching, ripping, seizing my floundering fish heart, and walks solitarily into shaded eastern woods. That's such visceral imagery, and curled like a cracked hieroglyphic in the place we last kissed. There's always those places, that music, those little things that make you think of that person. So beautiful write and very well done.
Indeed. I'm enjoying these this turnout. So deep and awesome, and you know what I mean, like all these rites are just one after another, just great. Speaking of which, where are we headed next, Miss Pam?
All right, up next we have Fucked by Guilty, and go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
This already sounds relatable. All right. Fucked by the poet Guilty. Lover number 69, upon the assembly line, you get 15 minutes of romantic time. Off he goes in a cloud of smoke. If he wasn't so dreamy, this would be a sad joke. Of course, you hope and hope this year he would swear to only you be true. Part of the lure is knowing, as long as his eyes are blue. Other girls find him attractive, and you got to be seen, leaving the invisible boy yearning that he'd be his dream. Lover number 69, line up on Valentine. Cupid's arrow is not bent. His affection is only on rent. Come tomorrow, you will be sore. He's moved on to another whore. Too bad she has his name, and another boy carries a torch flame. End poem. Wow. That was pretty brutal and blunt, straight to the point. But yeah, it's another one of those that you can't help but relate to in a lot of ways. That you know, as you live life, you go through these phases, and sometimes you're on both ends of this. Like sometimes you're the one who is a bad guy, even though you're not always trying to be. And then sometimes there's just misunderstanding, but in this one, there was no misunderstanding. It was just, yo-yo, gotta go type of thing. And I like the rhyme scheme is interesting, like, cause it was all over the place, but yet it worked, you know? Like it went from smoke and joke, and then dreamy and hope didn't rhyme. But then there was nine line, and then romantic time, sort of. But yeah, I can see how this would be one of those devastating things, that another boy carries a torch flame. So, you know, in the thing, it's a sad desire, hope, love, loser, Valentine's Day. So the person really got jilted, you know, over the affair. And whether they knew or not, I can't tell. but maybe they were just hoping the other person would change, and that obviously wasn't the case. They just went back to their main source of entertainment slash attention. But yeah, this is very it's heart wrenching indeed, and again, very relatable. So, how about you, Pam? What'd you think?
Well, yeah, I have to agree. This is, especially from the title, very hard-hitting and edgy, strong lines. I too, like the, as you mentioned, the different rhyme schemes. I think that works well to be a reflection of the chaos of love and pain and despair. I thought the idea of the assembly line lovers was a great extended metaphor. And the idea of somebody who just purposely uses one woman after another and just sends them down that assembly line. And I really particularly like this year he would swear to only you be true. Part of the allure is knowing as long as his eyes are blue, and then the line after. But the sadness really comes through, especially in those end lines, because to me the end line speaks where it says, too bad she has his name and another boy carries a torch flame. I think the other boy carrying the torch flame is the boy who truly loves the woman who this other man is treating like that assembly line lover, and she doesn't even notice him. So oftentimes we're obsessed with someone we can't have or doesn't want us, and we don't notice the person that actually carries a flame for us. Wonderful, heartfelt, right, and very well done.
Indeed, yeah, that's why I mentioned it. Sometimes we're on, throughout life, we've been on a lot of, well, I can't speak for everyone, but sometimes people are on either side of that. I mean, you don't know that someone cares, or you're the one that cares, you know. So, Kate, what do you think?
Oh, yes, totally relatable, isn't it? I mean, it's I love the fact that it's lover number 69. I thought that was brilliant. That was a clever part. I like that so much. Upon the assembly line, you get 50 minutes of romantic time. It's just so clever. It's so beautifully put together. Off he goes in a cloud of smoke. As if he wasn't so dreamy, this week. Sorry, somebody's already read that one. Shut up, Kate. I don't like to repeat what someone else has said because it can get very boring. So, yes, I thought this was very, very clever. And I do feel sorry for the other boy who might be carrying this torch. It's not easy. Women, I don't know about men so much, but some women do tend towards the bad boys and are tempted, you know, by the bad boys. And if you're a good boy, not so good. It's a shame. But yes, I thought it was very well written. And that picture tells it all, doesn't it? So good. So thank you so much, Guilty. I'm sorry you've been fucked.
And not in a good way. So, yeah. Powerful pieces today. I love it. Where are we off to next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Love Thyself by Weaver of Dreams. And Kate, you were nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So let me find that. And, oh, wait. No, you didn't. You didn't supply us with a SoundCloud. Never mind. That was somebody else. So go ahead and give that a read for us, Kate.
Certainly. I'll do my best. I'm afraid my voice is going a little bit. I have a lot of problems at the moment, but I shall do my best. That's why I didn't send the SoundCloud in, because I couldn't do it properly. So let's hope I can do it this time. This is a lighter side. I warn you now, there's no angst involved much in this. It's just a bit of fun. When I was still an awkward, angular young girl, the 14th of February was a very black day. For many years, I was ridiculed by my peers for my obvious lack of admirers. I received no cards. I took a job in an office. There, nothing changed. Until today, when on my desk there appeared a dozen red roses and an enormous Valentine's Day card. I acted surprised and not very pleased. 2 hours later, another dozen red roses were delivered. This time I frowned and sighed deeply as I tossed them into the waste paper bin. I noticed Peter smiling at me. I smiled back. From your boyfriend? He's certainly keen. Not usually, but since I dumped him, he has become a bit of a nuisance. Do you want me to have a word with him for you? No, no, it's fine. No, he wouldn't be meeting my imaginary boyfriend. He then asked me out to dinner. I said yes. Later, at home, getting ready, I knew I'd be eating dry toast for a while, but the cost of those roses was well worth it. End poem.
That's awesome. That was quite the twist there. Yeah, this is a great piece, and the way you read it, obviously, it makes it even that much better. Because obviously you know how the poem is supposed to go, and plus I just enjoy your reading. But like I could get the beginning big time, like because when I was young, I was very like a nerd, you know, nobody liked me, got picked on all the time, whatever. And you know that's how it ends up. And then you know you receive no cards, and then the way that you took the story, like you know you took a job in the office, and as it progressed. You really played the role well and ended up landing the catch. That was a very clever poem indeed. I haven't smiled that much in a while. But not only that, but you continued with the ruse. Like 2 hours later, another dozen ruses. And then the dialogue, the back and forth is what really gets me too, because you did such a great job of it. You know, it's like a little story there, and the ending. Obviously, I knew I'd be eating dry toast for a while, but the cost of the roses was well worth. Yeah, that was pure awesome, Kate. I'm glad you wrote something to this.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Pam. What did you think?
I did enjoy this one. It seems like you had a lot of fun writing this, Kate. I like that you wrote to the prompt, happy, phony, romanticized, overly commercial, sucks to be single, pretend that it's love day. And I, too, found that beginning part really relatable, you know, because being a nerd also myself and, you know, but the thing I remember about Valentine's Day, the thing that was so disappointing is I always felt like, I don't know about anybody else's schools, but for us in like elementary school, everybody had to bring Valentine's for everybody in the class. And then the first day of middle school, which was seventh grade, like not first day, but you know, in seventh grade, things then changed. It was like you gave Valentine's to whoever you wanted to. There was no requirement. And so then at that point, you discovered how truly unpopular you actually were. And I always felt like if they didn't have you, if they just had it from the very beginning, you know, that you only give Valentine's to who you want or you had no Valentine's given at school, then we wouldn't be dealing with that effing disappointment in seventh grade, you know? And, but I like that. I like the beginning. I like this all the way through, but yeah. And then the fact that she goes and this character buys herself roses in order to attract the attention of the other man, great dark humor in those end lines. I knew I'd be eating dry toast for a while, but the cost of the roses was well worth it. Great lines there, Kate, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, that made my night. So, besides that, where are we headed to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have The Saboteur by Inner Sanctum. And it goes like this. You're leaving, and that's very plain to see, but you have gone and put the blame on me. It wasn't me who cheated like a knave. Remember, I'm the person who forgave. you've done me wrong at least 100 times. Now I'm the one who's guilty of love crimes. You sabotaged our marriage from the start, but you won't leave me with a broken heart. You really tried to do your very best to rip my beating heart out of my chest. You think your leaving's quite the crushing blow, but I am stronger than you'll ever know. I don't know why you think I'm made of glass or why you treated me as second class. You're nothing but a serpent in the grass. Don't let the screen door hit you in the ass. End poem.
Well, that escalated quickly. I obviously enjoyed the rhyme. But progressive poetry always gets me, you know. And this one is just that. Where's that one part it's the beginning. It says, you're leaving, and that's very plain to see, but you've gone and put the blame on me. It wasn't me who cheated like a knave. Remember, I'm the person who forgave. But the fact that it's not just a relationship but a marriage, it takes it to a whole other level, because relationships, in most regards, are easier to get out of, because there isn't the ramifications legally and financially and all those things, and you have to go through a process to get it changed or fixed. But this is one of those ones to where they're like, hey, you know, you think you're hurting me, but you're actually doing me a favor, because I don't have to deal with your ass anymore. You know, that's why I said, don't let the screen door hit you in the ass. He was very specific to the screen door, not just the door, but the screen door. So, I could appreciate the simplicity and yet boldness of this piece. I really, really enjoyed it. Kate, what did you think?
Ah, The Saboteur. Fabulous title. I thought this was epic. I really, really enjoyed this so much. I like the AABB rhyming. I thought that was really well done. You know, to me, it sounded so authentic. It sounded as though this is how the person speaks. You know, you're leaving and that's very plain to see. You've gone and put the blame on me. I mean, that people talk like that. It's a natural way. It's not all been tidied up and made glossy and shiny. It's just how this person feels, written in this person's words. I thought it was brilliant. Inner Sanctum, I hope to read more of your work, because this really, it made me smile and it made me sad and it made me sorry. And that's all the things that you're subjected to when you're reading somebody's work. It's great. So, yes, thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, just getting people to feel what you feel. That's awesome. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. I like Inner Sanctum writing. They're a wonderful rhyming poet that does darkness very well. I think that was probably one of the darkest prompts in the contest, with that painting of somebody physically getting their heart ripped out. And I like how this has a bit of that dark humor at the end with "don't let the screen door hit you in the ass," and has that attitude of, you know what, I'm not made of glass, I'm not going to break, you know, you go ahead, you walk away, you place all the blame on me, that's fine, I know it takes two to tangle. You know, it speaks on that idea that, you know, you can't just point the finger at one person. And I do like where it says, it wasn't me who cheated like a knave. Remember, I'm the one person who forgave. You've done me wrong at least 100 times. Now I'm the one who's guilty of love crime. And I have to agree, The Saboteur was definitely a great ending, title. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, especially The Saboteur could play in, because they know the person's nature, so that they know a lot of things that they were probably doing on purpose. So, yeah. Wow. All right. So, thank you for that Inner Sanctum, and where are we headed to next, Ms. Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Futile Fantasy by Stelina. And she was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
In my futile fantasy, I face another day of aching moments when I awaken at dawn, weary of the night that whispers your name in intense illusions of our unparalleled pleasure in each other as we drift together in my desirous dreams. In my futile fantasy, there, your very essence enshrouds me, while caressing me, it consumes me. Yet, taunting me with its absence, ad infinitum. Trying not to betray the secrets of my heart, I feign insouciance and normalcy. In my futile fantasy, alas, my world is but an inky black chasm, brightened briefly only by your glow. Summer sun in stark winter hours, breaking through a pewter sky, melting the ice of my frigid shell. In my futile fantasy, how I yearn to touch your face, trace each line, sweep my fingers through your lustrous locks, as soft and black as a raven's wing, to curl in the warm curve of your arms, and soar into the blue azure sky of your eyes. In my futile fantasy, when Aurora steals your shadow away, bleakness beckons with its bony finger, and I, loath to leave your side, wander into its realm, pining for eternal night when I get lost in my reverie, and welcome your precious presence into my arms.
Stelina, she always leaves you wanting more. Her reads are always fantastic. Her SoundClouds, obviously, she does so well in her presentation, her and Arcana both. But the poem itself, it's strange because it's like five poems in one almost. Each stanza can stand alone, and yet they all work together as well. So the imagery and the metaphor is phenomenal. My favorite, it's hard to choose a favorite, but I would have to say in my futile fantasy, alas, my world is but an inky black chasm, brightened briefly by your glow, summer sun in stark winter hours breaking through a pewter sky, melting the ice of my frigid shell. I mean, that is both lovely and can be seen as tragic in knowing that that it's a feeling that you want to happen, but that probably won't, you know, because it's a futile fantasy. You know, it's something that you yearn for, and that you put in all of your basket of hopes and all that stuff, but in the end, it doesn't matter because it's futile. So, and that's the human condition. That's the way we are. Like our belief structure is so strong, and the yearning that we have is so strong, and that it drives us to madness sometimes, even if it's only a temporary madness. And she displayed the nuance and the depth and all the directions that the heart can go in such a beautiful way. So thank you for that, Stelina, and I'm glad that you were inspired. What did you think, Kate?
Oh, she never, ever fails to please, really. I tell you, Stelina, you could read me a bedtime story and I would fall asleep. And that's something I can't say I would ever do any other time. Your voice is wonderful. And in this one, particularly sweet and sorrowful, which I enjoyed. I was going to pick the same stanza that you picked, Robert. It was my favorite too. But the first one is absolutely brilliant because it leads you into the story. And the last stanza, oh, let Aurora steal your shadow away, bleakness beckons with its bony finger. Yeah, that would be exactly how you'd feel. Will to leave your side to wander into its realm. That you kind of would, wouldn't you? Take your bed and just fade away forever. I thought it was, as usual, I hate to say that, but I thought it was wonderful. And I really, and the music, of course, just lifts it. But your reading was fabulous. So thank you so much for sharing.
Indeed. Tam, what about you?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. It's a wonderful emotive write. I love the title Futile Fantasy and how that's repeated throughout. It's wonderful alliteration, really speaks strongly on the thought of unrequited love and how we can send ourselves into those flights of fancy, especially at nighttime, you know, as we're laying in bed and we're thinking about what could possibly be, though we know that it never will. That I really like this all the way through, but especially in my futile fantasy, alas, my world is but an inky black chasm, brightened briefly only by your glow, summer sun and stark winter hours, breaking through a pewter sky, melting the ice of my frigid shell. That idea of that love that you want, that beckoning, I really like that this reminds us how the heart and the mind can play tricks on us. And again, the ending I like too, pining for eternal night when I get lost in my reverie and welcome your precious presence into my arms forever. That day that you don't wake up and you can just eternally dream about that person. It's a bittersweet and beautiful, very well done.
Yeah, when the mind decides to actually join the heart for once and they both turn against you, that's no bueno. All right. So thank you for that, Stelina. Where are we headed to next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Love Sucks by Kingsley Medlin. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
And we'll try. Love is in the air like a toxic cloud that falls to the ground, tainting all that it would touch. Is it really too much to ask for a mask so I don't breathe it in? Because that's where it begins, like a mold that grows upon a soul. I need to live deep down in a hole like a doomsday prepper, where it can seep in and take hold like some killer cold, an insidious pandemic that makes one feel schizophrenic, regressive, aggressive, and possessive. Forever altered and changed until completely mental and deranged, to those that love, I say, you are welcome to it. And if my words seem unfavorable and malign, this con, this moneymaker, this grift called Valentine, keep your cards, roses, and chocolates, and you need not expect any of mine. End poem. Wow. That was a different style than I'm used to. I think I kind of missed the beginning, but I picked up in the middle of the cadence there. I like the beginning, especially "Love Is in the Air," like a toxic cloud that falls to the ground, tainting all it would touch. So, you know, it takes me back to that to those moments when I felt such, you know, like I'm like so opposed to it, so like envious even of people who are able to attain love and to be able to love someone else and be loved in return. It was such a conundrum for me. But you know, as you get older, things change. And this really was made. I could really feel this. You know, in the ending, you keep your cards, roses, and chocolates, and you need not expect any of mine. It's like I'm loving all these Valentine's Day Scrooges. They really make my day, crack me up. And I know it's not necessarily funny, but it's not that the content is funny, but the attitude, like the kind of you know, what is it? I'm sorry, I'm at a loss for words today, but like the angst, you know, that comes with it is what makes me chuckle and laugh, and because it reminds me of myself. So yeah, this is another great piece. Forever altered and changed until completely mental and deranged, to all those that love, I say you're welcome to it. So he's not necessarily saying, hey, you know, you guys shouldn't do that. But he's saying, you guys can do that. Just don't expect shit from me. You know? So I dig that. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I liked the dark humor in this and the wonderful lyrical quality. I was just peeking over on Kingsley Medlin's page, and he's so funny because he has on his page, "One should flatter a woman as one gives biscuits to a dog, often, more than often, in fact, all the time. Decreases the chance of getting kicked in the nuts." It seems like he's speaking from personal experience. Yeah, but I thought this had a really nice rhythm to it, a great lyrical quality that almost flowed as if it could be made into, like, say, a rap or hip-hop beat song. I liked the dark humor. I mean, there is a sadness to it too, but there's also humor. I really like the parts where it says, because that's where it begins, like a mold that grows upon a soul. I need to live deep down in a hole like a doomsday prepper. And then an insidious pandemic that makes one feel schizophrenic, regressive, aggressive, and possessive. Forever altered and changed. And that's true. You know, love does change you. There are times where it changes you for the better. But more often it seems like it will change you for the worse. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. What about you, Kate? What were your thoughts?
Yes, I can only echo everything that's been said, because those lines are the ones that I would have thought of. But there isn't really, if you think about it, anything you can take individually, because it flows so well. I just thought it was brilliant. Funny and sad, dark, and then not so dark. Perfect. I thought it was really, I mean, you've read them. I know you've read them, but an insidious pandemic that makes one feel schizophrenic. And then we have those regressive, aggressive, and possessive. That's lovely. So lovely. So I can see why that was put in there. And love does. I mean, love is a pain, and not in a good way. It's difficult. It's hard. It's giving people what they want while keeping your own personality and all those intricacies. Just an awful lot of work. But yes, I love this. This is going to go with me. I'm going to tuck it away and read it again. So thank you so much for sharing this, Kingsley. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that comment reminded me of a line of a song that I wrote a long time ago. It says, "Love is a sword that cuts deeper than you think, and every little devil wants to have their drink. So, yeah, very relatable. All right, Pam, what's up next?
All right, up next we have Convoluted Snake Charmer's Flute by Eric Svensson, and we have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Convoluted Snake Charmer's Flute. Perched on abysmal edge, serpent strikes, inserts hot muscle fangs, love's venom piston pumps, surreal somersault, serpent entwined, hushed adrenaline rush, conundrum of love's ecstasy and terror clutters, freefall plunge, distorts normality, grinder grunge, infinity launch, ever onwards, head over heels, tandem yoke, capricious, vicarious, delirious dance, love's flying lemurs, arm limbs glide, latch onto body trunks, compulsion, space locks compression, two trees uprooted from gravity, crowns flower galaxies, circles within spiral swivel, roots awry beyond gravity, combustion fueled by carbs, body chocolate plated armadillos, space waltz wedlocked, love's long tongue scoops up pickled picadillos, snake charmer jettisoned by G-force, satellite dish chameleon eyes effervescent, mulberries crushed, mashed blueberries, cranberries crammed, juniper berries pureed, Cupid's flame sharp arrows ever present, hit and run, extract love's venom at all costs, target missed, snake charmer on siesta, Pan would placate, but he's out of town, until Saint Valentine pitches, stitches back together brave hearts, Khalil Gibran's threshing floor explore, wombat, dingbat, paddywhack, never say never again, end of un-Valentine poem.
Eric is something else. He reminds me of like this, like a college professor or some reading Shakespeare out to the class. You know, he has that voice and the cadence. I found it interesting. Like the beginning, perched on an abysmal edge, serpent strikes, inserts heart muscle fangs, love's venom piston pumps, and then it goes into surreal somersault, serpent entwined. Hushed, adrenaline rushed, conundrum of love's ecstasy and terror clutters. So it's like you got struck by Cupid's arrow, which is poisoned, you know, and then it says love's venom piston pumps. So it's all, like the feeling of love is already pulsing through your body. And then I like the part where it's hushed, adrenaline rushed. So it's like, all the feelings that you were holding back, like, come, you know, rushing forth, and it all starts coming out, and the conundrum of love's ecstasy and terror clutters. I assume it means, like, clutters the mind, you know, and I really enjoy the way he weaves in and out of direct lines. And then he goes back and he puts some other things in between. And for me, I get kind of thrown off a little bit, but then I go back and then it starts to make more and more sense each time I read them. And like love's flying lemurs, arms, limbs glide, latch onto body trunks, compulsion, space locks, compression. Like, it's going to take me a minute to understand what that means fully, but I really like the love's flying lemurs. I never thought I'd see those words in combination with each other, you know? So, yeah. And then the end, near the end part where he says, Cupid's flame, sharp arrows, ever present, hit and run. So Cupid did a flyby and is extract love's venom at all costs. Targets miss, shake, snake charmer on siesta. I thought that was very, very clever, and it made me smile big time. So, Pam, what were your thoughts?
I did enjoy this one. It's another one that's got some great dark humor. I like how it speaks on the idea that love can strike at some of the most inopportune times, and we're not always welcoming of it. You know, I really like how he starts out with really dark lines, perched on abysmal edge, serpent strikes. And then he's got that kind of imagery that really just makes you smile. Tandem yoke, capricious, vicacious, delirious dance, loves flying lemurs, arms, limbs, glide. I also really like combustion fueled by carbs, body chocolate plated armadillo, space waltz, wedlock. You know, it's when we become so focused on getting those chocolates, those roses, that marriage proposal. But the other thing I like about this, because it's very much to me a part of Eric's personality, is the end line where he says, never say never again. Because, you know, we want to say never again, but just as we do, you know, love jumps out unexpectedly. So just an excellent creative write, great wordplay, imagery, and metaphors, and very well done.
Indeed. Eric's work is also always entertaining, to say the least. Kate, what about you?
Yes, entertaining is the word I would use, definitely. Ah, so many beautiful lines, and so much to get into, think about. I'm sorry, I'm getting into it and thinking about it as I speak. It's not a good idea. I like two trees uprooted from gravity, crowned flowered galaxy, circles within its spiral swivel, roots awry beyond gravity. Just so very clever. Really is. And yeah, snake charmer on siesta, Pan would prostrate, but he's out of town. So good. Yeah, and then we have good old St. Valentine pitches up, put things together, carries it on. Wombat, dingbat, paddywhack, so cool. Never say never again. I think this is, again, one that I would have to read a few times because, as you say, there is so much in there that plunges from one stanza and misses another and goes back into. So it's, as always, very clever, very interesting. So thank you, Eric, for sharing.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm always glad when he's inspired to write for my show. Gives me a good feeling he's able to bring some creativity to the table. And it's something very different than the normal stuff. It kind of really shakes it up. All right, Pam, where are we off to next?
All right. Up next, we have Hearts of Shadows by Arcana Amore. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Stairs gaze back from the depths of darkness, hidden from God, where they sin in peace, unleashing fettered fears from inner beasts, on portraits of panic through blinded eyes. Inside the pitch dwells predatory specters, eager to pounce, tearing flesh from bone. Their savage ferocity invokes abject horror. The darker the mind, the deeper the dread. Whispers grow near on ghostly footsteps. Trembling towers rise above haunting mists. Heartbeats gallop on the hooves of nightmares, feeding this twilight maelstrom with despair. Banshees scream curses upon tortured souls. Virtues fade, flickering to melting murmurs, dousing weak wills with shameless flirtations. Morality lies decaying in forsaken tombs. A yawning abyss beckons venture within. The longer one peers, the further is fallen. Swallowed in tempests of tainted temptation, seduced by the embrace of duality's demons. The innermost recesses hide hearts of shadows, where devilish drums beat tremoring tempos, drowning all light in pitch black waves that ebb and flow rivers of ebony blood.
Arcana, yeah, that's I started to get some Nine Inch Nails vibes there in the beginning, but yeah, that beat was pretty awesome to go with it. Originally, it says he wrote it for a different contest, but it does work well here. He wrote it to Friedrich Nietzsche's "Battle Not with Monsters, Lest Ye Become a Monster," and if you gaze into the abyss gazes also into you. So yeah, this really reflects that, and yet it also works well in this aspect. Of course, his rhyme is always impeccable. His meter and the way that he constructs and what is that? I can't think of words today. The cadence and the structure. There you go. Yeah, of his poetry is always awesome. And he always picks these really cool images too, and Hearts of Shadows is a great title as well. I really enjoyed it. It's hard to pick a favorite top stanza, but it says, "Whispers grow near on ghostly footsteps, trembling towers rise above haunting mists, heartbeats gallop on the hooves of nightmares, feeding this twilight maelstrom with despair." I also appreciate his use of words, like his swallowed in tempests of tainted temptation. You know, the alliteration there is awesome. And then, where's that one? There's another part that I really enjoyed. Their savage ferocity invokes abject horror. You know, I always like the word, the use of the word abject, and I also like the word ferocity, but savage ferocity, it even amplifies it even more. So I am glad that Arcana decided to share this with us, because I never would have seen it. And I always like seeing his work. So thank you, Arcana, for sharing this with us. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was glad, too, that he decided to share this on the board. It does work well for tonight's show. And the idea of being held prisoner in the depths of despair, which oftentimes heartbreak can lead us into. Powerful lines throughout, wonderful use of alliteration and visceral imagery, especially like inside the pitch dwells predatory specters eager to pounce, tearing flesh from bone, their savage ferocity invokes abject horror, the darker the mind, the deeper the dread. And then banshees scream curses upon tortured soul. Virtues fade, flickering to melting murmurs, dousing weak wills with shameless flirtations. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, that's another one. Dousing the, what is it? Dowsing weak wills with shameless flirtation. That's a good catch. Kate, what did you think?
Yes, that was one of my favorites as well. I thought that was beautiful. I did particularly like the first stanza. I'm sorry, my voice is going. I do apologize. Stared, gazed back from the depth of darkness, hidden from God where they sin in peace, unclean fetters of fears from inner beasts, on portraits of panic, through blinded eyes. I thought that was absolutely amazing. And as always, his voice, reading his poetry, is really exceptional. So it's just so easy on the ear, and we know how much work must go into it, but it always seems so refreshingly... Oh, I'm sorry. I can no longer talk. I apologize. I think I'm going to have to go, because my mouth is not working anymore. But I loved it. Thank you, Arcana, for that.
Okay, Kate. Well, it was good having you. If you you want to stay on the line, you can. If you need to go, you can go. But thanks for your comments, anyways, and for hanging with us. All right. So where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Hallmark Doesn't Tell You That by Laughing Wolf. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Hallmark doesn't tell you that. Anything can happen, but it never has. Roses evolve thorns as a warning to florists. Rating yourself a 10 equals a dime a dozen. The monsters distressing damsels, tending to be their own expectations. Chivalry wasn't about women, but they killed it, nevertheless. Consider yourself the prize. Considering yourself the prize is self-induced objectification. Her biological clock is not his deadline. Love is a parasite, masquerading as a host. Feminists are locusts, cropping equality. Feelings are useful as balloons. Stormtroopers don't get lightsabers, but Hallmark doesn't get to tell you that. Doesn't tell you that. End poem. I thought that was a very, it was a very bitter indeed. I'm not sure, I obviously I don't have to agree with everything that they say, but there are some interesting parts in here, like the beginning especially. Anything can happen, but it never has. Roses evolve thorns as a warning to florists, and rating yourself a 10 equals a dime a dozen, and the monsters distressing damsels tend to be their own patients. Chivalry wasn't about women, but they killed it nevertheless. I can appreciate the, like I said, the bitterness that goes into it, and it really does reflect the kind of, what do you call it, the anger on Valentine's Day, and you know, especially if you feel unwanted or you feel that the other side isn't deserving of your company or whatever it may be. So yeah, I'm glad that they got inspired to put this piece up, because I saw on the contest that they were thinking about it, and they eventually did. So I'm glad that they did. Well, what do you think about it, Pam?
Yeah, I always enjoy and appreciate Laughing Wolf's poetry. And he wrote to the prompt, "Saint Valentine was eventually imprisoned, beaten, stoned, and beheaded. Hallmark doesn't tell you that." I thought this was a clever take on the prompt about how there's so much game playing in society and lying, and especially when it comes to holidays where, you know, corporations can get the big money. You know, I really like how this has some really thought-provoking lines, and that sense of, as you said, that anger and that bitterness. But also that to me, there's that kind of truth in how people will use feminism in order to sell ideals. And, you know, because we have, honestly, in my opinion, I'm sorry, but I think there are points, and this isn't true for all feminism, but it's gone too far. And I probably shouldn't say that, but to me, it has. It's gone to the point where we're not trying to be equal, like, you know, some women aren't trying to be equal to men. They're trying to stand on top of their heads and crush them into the ground, and, you know. But I liked the dark humor of stormtroopers don't get lightsabers, and also where it says that rating yourself a 10 equals a dime a dozen. In other words, if you're just going to be like the rest of the lemmings, you're just going to follow over the cliff, there's nothing special about it. Now, one thing I really think isn't fair, and this doesn't have to do with the poem, but it does make me think of it, is where he says her biological clock is not his deadline. You know, if there is a God out there, I would like to say on record that is really not fair that women have to decide by the time they're 40 if they want to have kids or not, but guys can be knocking women up in their 90s, you know?
Yeah.
So, but... yeah, just a clever and a thought-provoking, right, with a bit of a different take on Valentine's Day. I like that. Very well done.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The equality is a whole lot different than the superiority. So, yeah, I totally agree. All right. Thanks for that, Laughing Wolf. Quite different, and which is good because variety is the spice of life. All right. So where are we headed to, Pam?
All right. Up next we have "Let Me Go, But Stay With Me" by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. Tripping on obsessive compulsive thinking, sinking into believing that dominating is a strong and noble sign of how much you love me. You hold me too tight, and I don't need my body. When I ask for a cold Coke, you bring a hot toddy. Can't I have my own thoughts and beliefs and behavior? When I want a quickie, you want slow and to savor. When I want to park here, you say over there is better. When I'm not at all cold, you make me put on a sweater. Two peas in a pod, yet not in the same pod. Don't you find that the least bit odd? Am I under your thumb? Why such ruling must there be? Why, what I want is for you to let me go, but to stay with me. End poem.
Ah, well, that was actually pretty awesome. The part where I like two peas in love, yet not in the same pod. Don't you find that the least bit odd? Yeah, I thought that was very, very clever. I always like the peas in the pod analogy. And then it's also contrarian, you know, like it says, you hold me too tight and I don't mean my body when I ask for a cold Coke, you bring me a hot tie. It says, can I have my own thoughts and beliefs and behaviors? Like, it's kind of like a smothering, controlling relationship, it seems, to where there's not much diversity. And there it's kind of like a cycle of not just it's borderline abuse, but not technically. I mean, it could depend to where they're just not happy with each other anymore. And part where it says what I want for you, the ending where it says that what I want is for you to let me go, but to stay with me. It's like, just loosen up, buddy. Like, you know, like just ease up, ease your restraints. Like, you don't have to hold so tight. Just let me be me and everything will be good. You know what I mean? So I can really understand that, because there are times when people get too controlling. They want too much from you, and you just need to back up. And she really did a great job in showing that. And she has like her own peculiar style that I enjoy. And I can't put my finger on it, but it's unique. And I always enjoy seeing her work in my contests. So thank you, Julie, for that. Well, what do you think, Pam?
I like this, and I have to agree with you. It does speak well on the whole idea of people who are too controlling and want to control your behavior and control your beliefs. But, and also on that idea of two people who really have just become distant from each other and can no longer relate to each other. I did like the humor, and when I want a quickie, you want slow and to savor. When I want to park here, you say over there is better. And also, you know, you hold me too tight and I don't mean my body. I like how that speaks on the idea of, you know, it's that emotional control that somebody has over you. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, I mean, actually oftentimes that's a lot worse. So thank you for that, Julie. Where are we headed to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Corpse Flower by Babbler, and it goes like this. Eye contact across the classroom, dimples forming at the corner of his mouth, and I frowned. Why was he looking at me like that, lazily? Like he saw something worth smiling at in the girl with wild hair and unstylishly holy jeans. Mouthy girl, dirty girl who just this morning shat in a bucket and sniffed all of her clothes checking for cat piss. Flowers on Valentine's Day with handwritten poems expressing his fondness, anonymous. Even though it was written practice calligraphy perfected in art class 2 seats down from me, I pretended to gag, watched him recoil. Why was he doing this to me? I didn't need his affection. I didn't have anything to offer. His green tendrils reaching for my ankles, coiling at my sneakers before I stomped them down. I wasn't falling for it. I wasn't going to be pulled down, tied down, trapped in a cliche, fantasizing about proms, dresses, and sweaty palms, whispers in an ear that felt like nothing worse than nothing. They smacked of bullshit. Hungry arms wrapping around my torso, an anaconda of uncontrolled vines, suffocating, smothering, pushing the hands away. Save it for another, someone softer, with the velvet heart to match the skin described in delicately swirling words. Pink-tinged cheeks and angelic curls you can poke your fingers into, caressing cotyledons into a magnificent bloom. I never begged you to feed me, Seymour. These palms are spiked stems of a devil's club, mouth edged in razor blades, carnivorous beast good enough only for flies, until they rot away filled with acid. Princes hack at the brambles, searching for their sleeping beauty, kissing the rose, not her thorns, unsuitable for weddings, proms, valentines, performative affection, a towering corpse flower, single leaf tinged red and reeking like bar alleys and discarded beer cans, meth labs and marijuana, struggling to find, purchase, mouth open in a scream, and yet I quake, roots blindly winding through gravel because they can smell it, what it is, even if I deny it, pungent odor lacing through the air, drawing flies, the best sort of fertilizer, hungry for bullshit. End poem.
Damn, that's very gritty and awesome. I really like that. This is probably one of my favorite poems from Babbler that I've seen, because it's like it's like I said, it's gritty, but it's like gut punching honesty. You know, it's like just really hits you hard for how this person views themselves and knowing that, or thinking that they know that someone else cannot appreciate what they don't have to offer, what they feel that they don't have to offer. And even if the person was genuine, they have their guard up big time and they're not going to be fooled. And they will go through all of this, this, you know, self-loathing and misery and dejection, like rejecting any sort of positivity that comes their way in the form of adoration or admiration is just seen as bullshit. And the end, I think it was very clever, if I'm gathering correctly. Like she kind of it says, and yet I quake, roots blindly winding through gravel because they could smell it, what it is, even if I deny it, pungent odor lacing through the air, drawing flies, the best sort of fertilizer, hungry for bullshit. So I'm wondering if, like, there's a small part of her that kind of wanted to believe it, like that 1%, like, that's in there, those flies that are hungry for the bullshit, because that's what she says he's spewing is bullshit. And yet there's part of her that kind of wants that. And even if it's a very small part or a part of her that she wishes to deny. So I thought this is great in its brutal nature and just throwing it all out there in a way that people nowadays are kind of, they just don't, you know. And I like this. It's a great change of pace and refreshing, even if it is about bullshit. So. Thank you, Babbler, for that. Pam, what did you think?
You know what? Well, first of all, I think you were spot on with that observation there. I do think the end lines speak on that idea of recognizing something or someone for the bullshit that they are, but being hungry for that love, that affection, that desire, that need to be wanted. And so, you know, wanting that bullshit, being willing to put up with it in a small part. This was definitely, it was edgy, gritty, hard-hitting. I love the metaphor of the corpse flower, which is a flower that actually smells like rotten meat in order to attract flies and other insects. And then then that's what it feeds off of. I thought that was really cool. I also liked the Little Shop of Horror reference. I never begged you to feed me, Seymour. And the attitude in this these lines. These palms are spiked stems of a devil's club, mouth edged in razor blades, carnivorous beast, good enough only for flies until they rot away filled with acid. So just great lines all the way through, and especially in that stanza. Amazing write and very well done.
Indeed. Man, that was awesome. So do we have time for one more, or will that be it for tonight, I think?
Well, we can do one more if you want.
All right, let's do one more and then close out.
All right, sounds good. Then we will end with Second Week of February by Cedar Chapman. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Second Week of February. The NutraSweet mind-melding industrial complex cloned a baby-faced roly-poly to knock on our door selling harlequin fantasies. Flaps of skin ooze out of his huggies like a 15-year-old hairless Shar-Pei. The man-child sabotages our corpus callosum using arrows tainted with Hallmark hieroglyphics. Oh, but on this day, life is not a box of chocolates. Melted Hershey Kiss skid marks are smeared against our innocent white walls and stained with streaks of blood-filled maraschino cherries. The crime scene does not stop there. Couples boast on Instagram, $200 per seat, diner en blanc, accompanied by flashing orthodontic teeth, sipping champagne and feeding each other strawberries and caviar. Meanwhile, the rest of us living on the dark side of the moon binge on a single supper special of Ichiban ramen. Perhaps when the MSG migraine kicks in, we will hallucinate Dick Clark lowering a giant broken heart-shaped LED beneath the sewers of New York City. When the apple fades, Solo Stanley will tip into his hustler bride catalog while Lonely Lily completes her Baker's Dozen marathon of Bridget Jones' Diary. Why can't Diaper Man splash some of his Cialis fairy dust on these two? Bah, humbug. Scrooge was spot on, but off the mark by a couple months. End poem. Hell yeah. That's exactly what I was talking about. He summed it up right there. Scrooge is spot on, but off the mark by a couple months. That's what I've been saying. Wow. I was very impressed by this. again, with the brutal nature of the shit smearing chocolate, skin marks on our innocent white walls. And the part that cracked me up too was why can't Diaper Man splash some of his Cialis fairy dust on these? Wow. Yeah, there's a whole lot of awesome in this Cedar. And I really cracked me up and made me smile. And yet I enjoyed the creative nature of the piece and how you went about in describing the scenario. It was great. But we don't have much time left, so I'll let Pam comment.
Oh, this is wonderful dark humor all the way through. I was so happy and glad to see Cedar bring his sense of humor out. Just a biting, hard-hitting line. I really like flaps of skin ooze out of his huggies like a 15-year-old hairless sharp face. And then, of course, that end line's bah humbug, Scrooge is spot on, but off the mark by a couple of months. And what else? Oh, God, just so many great lines. The crime scene does not stop there. A couple boast on Instagram, $200 per seat, dine en blanc. Amazing lines all the way through, great dark humor and very well done. And awesome show tonight, Robert.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody that decided to write, and if some rights were missed, we apologize, but they will be read on another show. I will have our next topic up soon. And remember that you're always welcome in the Solace of Shadows. Thank you, everybody. for contributing and being here. Good night.